Hello and welcome to WrestleWolf. I am your host, Dr. Damian Gibson. And it's time to talk about some AEW wrestling. Remember, this is an AEW podcast for fans, made by a fan. So my opinions are going to be biased. I am biased. I don't like WWE. I do like AEW. But we'll try not to talk about WWE in this episode because there's been a lot happening in AEW in the last few weeks since I dropped my last episode. And it's all positive. Like, it's all positive. And what I will say in relation to what we seem to spend a lot of time talking about here at WrestleWolf, as far as, you know, the whatever you want to call it, the promotion wars or whatever, I would just say from the outside in, it doesn't look like people are particularly happy across at WWE, and it will be interesting to see what the fallout is of Dwayne and WrestleMania, because it seems like he is now a boss, not just like a returning star, and it feels like he's in everything, and it sounds like that's annoying a lot of people. But the narrative basically since 2022 has been that AEW is a failing company. You know, and I'm starting to hear it from friends who are AEW fans that like the weekly shows are shit and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And if you get told that narrative by Wade Keller or, you know, whatever dipshit wrestling YouTuber you listen to, I mean, most of them are AI now. Like, it's absolutely so obvious that most YouTube channels are written, at least written by AI, and then presented by some smiling fucking idiot who consistently tell me that AEW is going to die any minute and no one likes it. And then you see Revolution and Big Business, like, almost back to back, you know, on top of All In last year and, you know, World's End, and the fact that, like, the biggest names in wrestling continuously sign for AEW over WWE. I just wonder at what point do we get tired of hearing that narrative that is obviously pushed from WWE out into the world and start to think, oh, this is bullshit. I mean, this is just utter bullshit. Like, we've had Ospreay, Okada, and I don't even have Okada on my fucking run list. There's been so much stuff happening, but I'll talk about it now off the top. Ospreay, who obviously signed 6 months ago, but, you know, debuted at Revolution, essentially. Okada debuted at Dynamite last week, and then Mercedes Money, who we all knew was going to show up in Boston this week, but still showed up. And there was interest from WWE, because that's the instantaneous pushback that you hear, that, like, oh, WWE weren't that interested in these guys. Bullshit. You know, like, Hunter would have given his left nut to have Will Ospreay in his roster. He wouldn't know how to book him, but he would have killed to have him on the roster. You know, and then there's people who just barrack for the demise of AEW. And I just wonder what's in it for them, you know? I mean, like, at the very least, having two promotions is better for everybody. There's more jobs for the girls and boys. There's more wrestling to watch. You know, like, I don't see what the downside is. And then AEW people get accused of tribalism if they dare stand up for themselves and go, no, this narrative that gets pushed through the wrestling media is wrong. Like, Revolution was the best pay-per-view AEW's ever done. Maybe one of the better pay-per-views ever done, full stop. They've just signed three of the biggest free agents in the world, but the three biggest free agents in the world. You know, like, what are they doing wrong? Like, tell me what they're doing wrong. And then I hear back, like, oh, well, you know, the weekly TV is not very good. Okay, well, what's happening on the other channel that's so great? Oh, the Bloodline. So the same story that's been going on for 6 years and just keeps swapping back and forth, So you guys loved that, but you hated the devil story that went for 6 months, or you were bored by the Eddie Kingston, Brian Daniels story that's been, you know, sort of weaved through AEW programming for the last 3 months, that I think has been brilliant. And I think I ended my one criticism, and we'll talk about that in a second, is sort of where it was placed in shows and stuff. But I thought the story between Brian and Eddie was really great. The stories are there in AEW. They're just not, smashed over the head with them ad nauseum. When AEW started, they said that they were going to do the work. Remember when Cody said that they would do the work? What that means is that you tell stories over a long period of time and you show it in the ring, you know? I will relent a little bit. There could be a little bit more story in the promos. The promos that are done very, you know, old school, like, I don't like you and you don't like me, so let's wrestle at this thing, which is fine, but that's usually the end of a promo. Like, if we had a little bit more actual real-world stories going on with wrestlers, I would be a bit happier. But Jesus Christ, you would have to be an absolute spoiled brat to be looking at what's going on in AEW at the moment and be like, eh, I don't know. It's not that good. I mean, it's the best roster put together since like 97, 98 WCW, right? Like, that's what I can think of. I mean, if you're including NXT, then maybe WWE in 2016, 17 had a pretty fucking good roster as well. But yeah, I suppose the point of my introduction is here is, at what point, what does AEW have to do to get the narrative changed? And I think the only thing that can change it is when WWE goes to Netflix and nobody watches it. Because their audience is old. They're not going to go to Netflix with them. You know, they just won't. They won't pay an extra fucking $15 to $25 a month to watch WWE. They just won't do that. And if it's an exclusive deal with Netflix, then... And this has been... I think this has been the concern of going to a streamer... Full stop. And I assume that the guys at TKO are smart enough to put stops in place in contracts to stop this from happening. But if you, there's nothing stopping Netflix from going, we're not showing this anymore. You know? Because that's how streamers do business. We've all had shows that we loved and, you know, we don't get to see any algorithms or readouts of numbers or anything, and then boom, it's just gone. Whatever that show may be. You know, so there's nothing stopping that from happening. So it's all very exciting at the moment. Everybody's patting each other on the back and, you know, getting out there in extremely expensive suits that still don't fit properly and shaking each other's hands and stuff. But I actually think that as much as I would have liked AEW to go on a streamer, and it still seems that like HBO Max Max is an option for them, I will be really interested to see what happens with WWE and if they generate new audiences being on Netflix. Maybe they will, and if they do, that's good, because, you know, there's more people watching wrestling, or what the McMahons call wrestling. But yeah, I just like in comparison to AEW, what else needs to happen? Like, what else needs to happen for people to be like, well, they're not going anywhere, you know? Like, they're not going anywhere. The content is really good. The roster they have is the best of all time. You know, could there be better stories being told? Yeah, maybe. But that happens with all wrestling promotions. I mean, you're telling me that everything in WWE is good at the moment? I can guarantee you it's not. Because the only thing I hear people talking about is the fucking Bloodline story. And as I've said time and time again, that's Paul Heyman. And that is why if I was Tony Khan, I would be spending whatever money I had to get Paul Heyman across to AEW. I wouldn't worry about anybody who's on the roster. Drew McIntyre, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, whoever, whatever. They can stay in WWE forever. the brains behind that storyline, and you can tell because if you've ever watched any ECW, you know how Paul books, and that Bloodline story is that. So yeah, AEW is really good at the moment, man. It's really good. It's really strong. The roster is amazing. There are people who are genuinely fucking over, and we'll get to them in a second. But I think it's a really good time to be an AEW fan. That's why I'm coming back with the podcast. I needed a break because I just felt like I was getting gaslit from all angles every time I like tuned into a fucking podcast or watched a YouTube channel. It was just like, AEW is shit. WWE is doing the greatest work in wrestling history. And I would just be like, okay. And then I'd watch 12 minutes of SmackDown and be like, it's the exact shit that I was watching 10 years ago. You know, like it's a 7-minute intro. It's a 12-minute promo in the ring. And then, you know, maybe we get a bad wrestling match for 3 minutes. You know, if you want to watch a wrestling show that has no wrestling on it, then watch WWE. Go for your life, you know? But there, having said that, I will make a concession that maybe TK needs to pull back on the Japanese-style booking a little bit and give us a little bit more story. But let's get into it. Revolution, as I said, was great. Obviously, we've all had a week or so to let that sort of sink in with us now. I liked the Christian and Danny Garcia match, and Edge obviously coming back in the last week has been good. I just thought we'd talk about the Christian and Edge story for a little bit. I think it's been solid. The sort of screwy finish of Edge winning the TNT title and then Christian getting it back, not my favorite thing in the world. I don't, you know, especially at big events, I kind of want to see people win clean. And so if you're going to have Christian win, just have him win, you know. But I think it leading to a match in Toronto, an I Quit match, in retrospect, it is actually all been pretty good. Like the overall pitch has been pretty good. I just think like there's been a couple of times where, you know, there's been a lot of chasing, a lot of Adam Copeland chasing Christian around the arena. And I think the guys are, we have seen with Edge and Christian that they're better than that. I think that they can put a little bit more thought into their promos than what they have been doing. It does kind of reek a bit of, I think Christian has really given his all to AEW in the time that he's been there, and the patriarchy is the best stuff that he's doing. But I think with this particular story, there's a lot of like Copeland showing up, seething, chasing Christian around the arena, and then like, oh, I'll see you in Toronto. What I did like in the last promo is that he came out with a case that said Spike on it. We don't know what that is, but it's going to be used in this I Quit match. So I hope it's, I don't know, I hope it's a kazoo with a spike on it or something. You know, like that would be pretty rad. Or Gangrel's comes out of that case somehow or something. But I think overall, if we get Adam Copeland beating Christian Cage in Toronto, it's going to be a great moment. It'll be another great moment in, to me, what's been 3 months of, like, since World's End. I think AEW has been doing really, really good stuff, and they haven't had a full roster to do it with. And overall, this has been good. I just think, like, with the individual promos between Adam and Christian, we could just have a little bit more story. Like, I think a few more sort of cinematic promos would be good. You know, I mean, Christian and Adam Copeland are best friends in real life. So, like, you know, show up at each other's houses. Like, make it a blood feud, you know? Make me believe that these are two friends who have, like, their relationship has completely gone off the rails. Probably a bit too late to do that now, seeing that we've got the finish of the story in Toronto. The only swerve I could see happening is Christian beats Adam Copeland again, and then Copeland joins the patriarchy. But I don't think that'll happen. And I think it's important for AEW to put the belt on Adam Copeland so he's on the posters, so he's doing the promos, so he's, you know, because we'll get to Samoa Joe in a minute, but me personally, I'm not, you know, this is going to sound very Vince McMahon, but like the belt holders are a representation of the company. And I think it's very important. If we've got Samoa Joe as world champion, then it's very important to have Adam Copeland as the TNT champion, essentially intercontinental champion. Will Ospreay and Takeshita, and that's now rolled into a story with Bryan Danielson. Will Ospreay's so fucking over. It's insane. I don't think I've seen a reaction to someone coming out like this since the beginnings of CM Punk in AEW. Maybe Jay White for a little bit. It's been interesting to watch Jay White. He's starting to... this week has been a real turning point for Jay White, so I'm very happy about that. He was never going to be champion straight away. He's going to have to do some time. But it's very interesting to me to see like how big a pop Will Ospreay gets in comparison to Jay White. People really like Jay White a lot. But Will Ospreay is like the face. Like he has to be the face of AEW for the next 5 years at least. That match with Takeshita, wasn't really expecting that much because I kind of keep undervaluing Takeshita, but the two of them put on a five-star clinic and leading to Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay having a match at Dynasty, which is the new pay-per-view. I've got a pretty good feeling that's when MJF is going to show back up, so that makes the roster even stronger again. Will Ospreay, whatever Tony paid for him, it's already paid for itself, you know. Eddie Kingston and the Daniel Bryan match I really liked as well. Eddie Kingston beating Bryan is great. Great to see Bryan Danielson putting Eddie Kingston over on his way out. He gets it. He gets that Eddie Kingston is like the Mick Foley of AEW. He's the heart and soul. If Daniel Bryan was the heart and soul of WWE for 10 years, and Ring of Honor before that, then Eddie Kingston is that for AEW. You know, he's the Rocky Balboa. He's the guy that got the chance against Cody Rhodes, the Apollo of AEW, and then he's taken his, you know, I mean, that's who he is. He's the Rocky Balboa of AEW. So for him to beat Bryan is fantastic. So the payoff to that was Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson were in the medical room together, both getting treated at the same time. And it ended with, you know, and Eddie Kingston saying, look, it means so much to me that you showed me some respect. And Bryan essentially saying, you fucking earned it. And it was a really good promo and it was on YouTube. I think these are the small things that AEW could improve. Have that on the pay-per-view. I mean, maybe it's produced after the pay-per-view, so okay, cool. Have it on this week. Have it on the next week's Dynamite. It's filling in. You know, there was like 25 minutes of after pay-per-view promos that sort of wrapped up stories that no one would have seen. You know, if you only bought the pay-per-view and watched Dynamite that week, you wouldn't have seen these promos, and they were great. A little piece of advice for Tony, who we know listens. Roddy Strong becoming international champion, I think, is good. I think it's one step in the Undisputed Kingdom story, which people are already bitching about. Oh, it's not going anywhere. Oh, I don't understand it. Oh, God, it's such a fizzer, Adam Cole. No. I mean, is everything meant to happen, like, within a week? Is this what people want? Like, imagine... Imagine if the Undisputed Kingdom won all of the championships in 1 week. You know, like imagine the fucking backlash AEW would get from that. You need to build the stories. They built the story up between Roddy and Orange Cassidy really well. They did promos for it every week for 8 weeks. Like, I don't know what else you meant to do. The Roddy Strong won, which means that there's now belts held by almost everybody in the Undisputed Kingdom. Wardlow not winning this week doesn't help that. But it's going to be a long-term story. And obviously Adam Cole's still on one leg. So until MJF comes back and until Adam Cole's ready to go, this is going to simmer away a little bit. So you've just got to be patient with that, you know. And I still think them being around and being a menace is good and important. It's important to have them around. It's important to get to the point where you're like, these guys are a pain in the ass, which is already happening. And I'll say this, at least the Undisputed Kingdom have a point. There's a reason why they all formed together and have formed a faction and have a continuous storyline of like Adam Cole's like, Wardlow's going to win the belt for me and he's going to fucking give it to me. And that can be a continuous storyline no matter who's got the belt, whether it's Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, MJF, whoever. In comparison to the fucking BCC, who have no rhyme or reason and haven't the whole time they've existed, but everybody loves them, you know, I fucking can't stand. I'm so bored by the BCC. I hate it. I don't hate the people in it. I really like Jon Moxley. I love Bryan Danielson, obviously. Claudio bores the fuck out of me. But just split them up. They don't. Why did they get together? They got together because William Regal, who's no longer in the company, was their manager, kind of, sort of, wanted to build a stable. Well, he's not there. So you want to talk about a stable or faction being pointless? Fuck me. The BCC are the most pointless faction in the company. The Undisputed Kingdom will have a point eventually, you know, has somewhat of a point now, but we'll have more of a point later on down the road. Samoa Joe being champion, I'm not super happy with. I understand, like, the argument is like, MJF will have to confront him when he comes back, or it'll look big time if Swerve beats him. I just don't think it does. I think, for me personally, you know, Joe's history in Ring of Honor, in Impact, just doesn't do that much for me. It doesn't. Someone telling me that someone has been a 6-time Impact World Champion or whatever makes me think, oh, okay, so you probably weren't good enough to be in WWE. I just, you know, like, I know people love Samoa Joe. I know he's like, you know, for hardcore fans, look, you fucking like CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, you should really like Samoa Joe. Well, I don't. I don't think he's a great promo. I don't think he's great in ring. And I just think sort of seeing an old chubby guy as the AEW champion is not great, especially when you've got other options like Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay, Jay White. It's time to pull the trigger. I understand that Tony is around my age and a massive wrestling fan. Too bad. You know, I understand these guys have come across from WWE and you want to reward them in some shape or fashion. Well, no. I just don't, like, Swerve has to beat Joe. And I'm almost definitely sure he will. If he doesn't in the next pay-per-view, yeah, what are we doing here? Because there's a long queue and there's people who genuinely could take AEW to the next level as champion, and Samoa Joe's not one of them. Someone who did contribute massively to AEW in the 4 years or so that he was there was Sting. I was reading other people sort of talking about how well off he is financially, how smart he was with his money, and did not need to come to AEW for money at all. He did it because he wanted to have one good final run with an organization that respected him and who he was, which did not happen in WWE. And he got that and managed to put Darby Allin over and teach him a whole bunch of stuff along the way. It might be the best retirement match of all time. I mean, in the sense of how it was done, the build-up to it, how respectful it was. I think I might have said on the podcast I was a little bit perplexed about the Bucks being the final opponents, only in the sense of like they hadn't really had much to do with each other. But you know that the Bucks are going to be able to put on a match that is memorable, and they are very good at booking the machinations of a match, and they did that really well for Sting at Revolution. And I just thought all of it was brilliant. And I wasn't loving Revolution, you know, as much as everybody else was. It was like an A++ from everybody else. I was probably at like an A-, B+ until this last match, and then the last match just, you know, I'll remember Revolution as Sting's last match, even though there was stuff that like Ospreay, Takeshita, Christian and Daniel Garcia, Eddie Kingston and Daniel Bryan. Great matches, but the three-way match between Joe and Swerve and Hangman was good. I didn't like the booking of that, so that left a sour taste in my mouth. But thank you, Sting, for everything in AEW. A lot of memorable moments, whether it was the cinematic matches with Darby against Ricky Starks. And who was Ricky Starks' opponent then? I can't even remember. You know, or teaming up with CM Punk, or, you know, the ongoing storylines with a whole range of different characters along the lines. It was great that he got to be tag team champion on the way out and vacate the belts, which leads to a tournament, and I love a tournament. But yeah, like for him to come back just to have that last run and give so much to AEW, a lot of credibility, I think, and the link between WCW and AEW, which doesn't get talked about enough. And I think it's something AEW should hint at more, because there's a lot of WCW fans out there. And I think if you kind of go, hey, listen, this is essentially WCW Mark II. You know, I know the people involved in the promotion would hate that. It's like, it's our own thing. We're not WCW. It's like, well, you're on TNT. You've got Sting on there. Like, you know, that's, it feels a lot like, WCW. Yeah, look, I was going to talk about big business in some detail, but I don't think we need to. Like the major thing is Mercedes Money debuting. But yeah, her debut at Big Business is huge. It's huge for numerous reasons. It already makes the women's division feel huge. The fact that she's immediately going into a feud with Willow is great, because you can't just have her come in and take the belt of Toni Storm, who has been doing fantastic work for 6 months, 8 months now. I think the story with Deonna Purrazzo, I like Deonna. I don't hate her or anything. It's been a bit flat. I mean, they've tried to use personal stories to underpin it, and it kind of has worked a bit, but I just, Deonna always sounds like she's super nervous. She always, even when she's cutting a promo, she sounds like she's about to cry at any moment. And that doesn't, it's not good for a big, tough wrestler to be, yeah, I'm going to come down there and I'm going to show you who's boss. Like, that doesn't, you know what I mean? And I used to notice that on Impact, you know, people would be like, Deonna Purrazzo is the best female wrestler out there. I'm like, well, she's great in ring, but as soon as she starts talking, it, you know, it's like, pay no attention to the woman behind the curtain. I'm, if I get my hands on you. Anyway, Mercedes is, it's amazing that she's in AEW. And again, WWE was supposedly after her, and I'm so sorry, and Vince is gone, and come back. And so I can't wait to see what happens. Britt Baker will be back soon as well. Britt was doing my head in before she left. But that's oversaturation. That's, you know, and the same thing will happen with Toni Storm as well. The AEW does have a habit of like driving things into the ground. Like, where was Thunder Rosa this week? You know, if the other girls don't like her, too bad. You know what I mean? Like, too fucking bad. Ruby Soho, Saraya, like, again, like, I know there's a storyline going along with them. I really like Saraya having her own little crew with her psycho brother, and I can't remember the Cameron, the Australian girl, like the crazy Australian girl. They're fun, but again, you only see them on like Rampage. You know, it's like, hey, Saraya's got a gimmick right now that's working. She's got this like crazy family that are like causing havoc, and she has good back and forth with Renee. So let's put that on Dynamite. You know, there seems to be this attitude from TK of like, that is fluff and that stuff that can be put on Rampage and on the back end of Collision. It's like, no, dude, to get stuff over like that, it needs to be seen. You know, the reason why the Dark Order never got over is because all the stuff that they were doing that was great was on fucking BTE or Rampage, and no one saw it. So then they'd show up to do a three-man, you know, on Dynamite, and everyone would be like, oh, fuck, Dark Order. I thought they'd gotten released. So they just need... good stuff is happening story-wise in AEW. It's just in the wrong spots. It's on Rampage. It's on YouTube. It's on fucking TikTok or whatever. That, you know... it still needs to be on the TV shows. It just has to be. But anyway, Mercedes Money will bring fans in. It's already happening. I mean, when she debuted, people bitching about her debut, like, oh, they didn't recognize the music. Okay. Well, what was AEW meant to do? Are they meant to have Tony Schiavone come out and be like, ladies and gentlemen, Mercedes Money? Like, it just would have... you play the music, now everybody knows what it is, right? I mean, people were chanting CEO within 12 seconds of seeing CEO on the screen, so I think everyone picked it up pretty quickly, you know. And then when they saw Mercedes come out on the stage, I think they fucking worked it out pretty quick. What I will say about her is that how professional her promo was fantastic. She got all the beats across that she needed to, that she's super thankful. She loves the fans, loves her family, is so happy that she's back. And did it so much more quickly than CM Punk. You know, like, this is even me having a go at Phil. You know, I am not... I've fallen off the CM Punk bandwagon, put it that way. But in comparison, when you think about the two, you know, you can compare the two debuts because they're both pretty fucking similar in their hometown. You know, whole thing's built around it. People are expecting around it. Phil's promo went for like 20 fucking minutes or something. It's this long rambling mess about like, oh, you know, on December this and that, I said I'd left professional wrestling. Well, I'm back. You know, Mercedes was like, I'm home. I'm so happy to be here. You guys have no idea how much this means. I love my family. Tony Khan, thank you for signing me. I can't wait to get started with AEW. Let's get down to business. She just sounded professional. Like, she just sounded like... and you can say this about WWE. If people have been in WWE and they've been in that system, they learn their chops, right? Like, they learn where the camera is. They learn how to fucking cut a promo to a deadline. They know how to make a match work to ad breaks. Like, they get that drilled into them. And Mercedes Money's got all the charisma in the world, but still just had that, like, professionalism, you know? So I can't wait to see what she does. Like, even, you know, Paul, who used to host the podcast with me, he's a big proponent, was when he was on the podcast, big proponent of the women's division in AEW getting more of a go. And so Mercedes comes across. She's the opening promo, a women's match between Riho and Willow is the main event. So it's already having a positive effect on AEW's booking of women. So that's really good. And at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter what gender a wrestler is. If they're over, fucking book them. You know, that's what I'm talking about with this Saraya thing of like, the Saraya's doing some fun work at the moment. So put it on TV. You know, like, yeah, there's something going on. I don't think Tony is a misogynist or anything like that. I just think he gets so wrapped up in, you know, the men's division that he just doesn't think about the women's division. But this is why you need to get, you know, as much as I disagree with Eric Bischoff on a lot of things, if you were to get someone like Eric to come along as a story consultant, you know, you don't put him in a position of power. You don't make him president of AEW. You don't make him an EVP or anything like that. You make him story consultant or, you know, executive story consultant. Like, you know, in a writer's room, there's like, you know, the writers, and then there's a story consultant, executive story consultant, you know. So, which basically means the boss, you know, story supervisor. There's a whole bunch of different terms that get used. And all that would mean is that the wrestlers can still come up with their own stories and block out their own beats and stuff. But you have someone, whether it's Paul Heyman or Eric Bischoff or fucking Brian Danielson, once he retires, is probably the perfect person to do it. Someone who is good at storytelling, good at wrestling storytelling, and Eric Bischoff was very good at that. Just as someone to bounce off, who gets final say on, like, you know, so Dynamite's on Wednesday. By Monday afternoon, I want you to just send me an email with the beats of what you guys want to do for this. So then we can set up the episode. And then on Wednesday, you know, during the day, we can go through it there. It's just as simple as that. And so it's someone's job to, because obviously Tony's spread thin. He's booking fucking 6 hours of wrestling. He's in the gorilla position, you know, like. And then Tony has a conduit for the wrestlers to go and speak to and stuff. And if Eric or Paul or whoever it is, Brian Danielson, needs to speak to Tony, they can, but they don't have to go with them with every little decision. And then Tony can concentrate on trying to grow the company, because you can't do both at the same time. You can't be an executive of a company and then the creative director of it. At the same time, when it keeps growing and growing, you've got a roster the size of the AEW roster. You're trying to go to other countries, you're this and that, and blah, blah. So I think that's the next important, that you don't need to sign any more talent. Like, you really don't. If you've re-signed MJF and he comes back, that's everything. I mean, there's, you know, if Drew McIntyre's out of contract, you could probably just leave him where he is. Like, you don't, you know, unless like a Bayley or Charlotte Flair or something came up, I wouldn't worry about signing anyone else. What I would worry about is getting a really good, seasoned wrestling storyteller on board to be head producer, head creative, whatever. And I hear Bischoff, like, I hear Bischoff giving AEW props when he thinks they deserve it, man. Like, he's just sitting there. He's just sitting there. Even just having him as, like, you know, he doesn't have to be an on-air. He doesn't have to be like an on-air GM or anything like that. He could come out and do that, because I think, like, the times where they have like Tony Schiavone go, "I've just heard from Tony Khan," da 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 da. I think having an authority figure helps with some storytelling as well, because you essentially have someone who. That's why WWE do it, and because it's a basic storytelling principle of there's conflict, right? So, like, not only are the wrestlers conflicting with each other, but there's also like a higher power here that is like changing the machinations at times, and it's just a really good and easy storytelling device to have. But you don't have to do it on air, but you do have to have it backstage. And that would be my major thing for AEW going forward. But fuck, outside of that, the last two Dynamites I've loved. I've really enjoyed them. Revolution was amazing. Collision has felt like a bit of a chore recently, but outside of that, I think it's been really good. But yeah, I think we'll probably just leave it at that. Thanks for listening, guys. Going to try and do more of this when I get a chance of just like talking about maybe more individual stuff in smaller bite-sized episodes. But anyway, I'm hosted on Spotify now, so everything's a bit easier to get stuff done. So yeah, if you're listening to this and you like it, you know, give us a follow or a subscribe. Give us a rating on Spotify, wherever you're listening. And tell your friends, like, hey, there's an AEW podcast made by this AEW fan, and he just sort of talks about issues and goes on rants, and it's fun and interesting. And yeah. All right. Well, guys, thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there. I'll talk to you in the next week.